This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. And this hour, of course, is when we go one-on-one with a gay person, a person of interest to the gay community. And we've got someone who's a bit of both today, quite a controversial figure in many respects as well, but a man who's had a very long career. John Michael Howson. John Michael, welcome to Joy and the programme.
Thank you for asking me, Doug.
You're more than welcome. Now, you've stuck your head round the door before with Will Conyers, I believe.
That's right, I have, yeah, when they've done fundraising for Broadway
at bedtime.
That's right.
Broadway at bedtime.
Yeah, now, good show that.
It is. But we haven't sat down and had a good talk about you, which is basically what I want to do today. You have been around for, I think it's fair to say, a fair amount of time, and you've done a hell of a lot of things.
I started writing for the theatre. I was a journalist. I started writing for the theatre in 1956. And then that was all sort of, nobody paid you for anything in those days. Because Melbourne was filled with wonderful little review theatres. And they ate up material like you wouldn't believe, because it was very topical, what we call satirical comedy, plus original music. And you never got any money, but you got a lot of experience. And in fact, we even opened our own theatre in St Kilda called the Island Theatre. There were no grants in those days, so you had to use initiative.
Yeah.
And we put in £25. So it's $50 each. I think six of us did. And
which was worth a lot more then than it is
now,
of course.
It was serious money. And we rented a hall in Blanche Street, St Kilda, called the ANA Hall, and started a theatre. And lo and behold, as they say in Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. And they did come. And it was very successful and launched a lot of people into the world of comedy and performing and writing. Then I went to England and I became I was a journalist working here at the ABC Newsroom and then the Royal Auto Magazine. But when I went to England, I got in the wonder world of fashion, and I was a fashion journalist. Knew nothing about it. I got the job because when I turned up, the editor said to me, "You're the best dressed person who's walked in the office. You've got the joke. Your job. You obviously look like you enjoy clothes." So I said, "Well, I do," and which was very nice because they gave me a clothing allowance. But I spent the next 4 to 5 years literally commuting between London and Paris.
What did you think of the fashion industry?
Wonderful. I mean, it gave me an entree into a highly sophisticated world. I mean, I was at the time when the big couture houses were beginning to realise they couldn't live on couture alone. They had to broaden out. And they all started off, well, a lot of them started off by doing men's ties. Then they started doing men's shirts. So I was covering a lot of that for a menswear magazine. And then they broadened out even more. I think some of them overdid it, like Pierre Cardin and whatever. But it took me into a world of extreme elegance, sophistication, with people that were really amazing, not only very creative, but incredibly socially powerful.
It's a very gay world as well, isn't it?
Well, you know, it was not in a flaring way. I mean, Sir Hardy Ames, who had been a war hero in World War II, was a very elegant, manly gentleman. And presumably he was gay, but you would never have known. And most of them were very discreet in the sense that They were first and foremost really polished gentlemen, and then obviously I think in some cases, although some designers were not gay, but in some cases the gay side came out through their work.
Yeah, but I mean, there's the work you've done. You know, you've worked in theatre, you've worked in fashion. They're very standard sort of gay professions in a sense, aren't they? They're places where somebody can be gay and it's not an issue.
Oh, well, what happened to me was when I came to Melbourne. See, I've never had one issue about being gay. From the moment I was 17, I thought, well, I think I'm gay and that. Well, they didn't use the word then. The camp was the word.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's the dice. And it never worried me. I never went through anything. But I found when I came to Melbourne, because I had been working in country newspapers or newspaper in Mildura, and in, believe me, in Mildura in those days, there was a little gay clique of very interesting men, actually. There were people that taught me a lot about music and theatre. I suppose you'd say they were closeted, but they were people right across the board. I mean, I met some interesting people there, but it was all... there were no gay bars or anything like that. Well, you met at someone's house, you had a perfectly lovely evening, dinner and drinks, and I think that was part of my education. It also didn't make me worry too much when I realised I was gay. But when I came to Melbourne and did get into the wonderful world of the theatre, I felt this was great because you didn't have to make excuses for yourself. You could be, you know, be what you wanted to be. And there were a lot of straight people. See, I think a lot of people think that all understanding happened in the last 10 years. Not so. I knew a lot of very good, kind, accepting straight people 50 years ago, which is not bad.
Well, that seems to be a very good point to take a little brief break there and bring in a piece of music. And appropriately enough, I Am What I Am from La Cage aux Folles. I guess that's sort of...
Oh, it's the anthem, isn't
that's
it?
That's usually the drag queen anthem.
Yes, but I think it's an anthem about anybody. And I don't think it's just about gay people. I think it's about people who want to live their lives as they see fit. And as long as they don't hurt anybody else, they do what they do. And I think it's a wonderful anthem for everybody, but particularly written about a gay character in La Cage aux Folles.
Okay, well, this is John Barrowman's version coming up. I Am What I Am.
I am what I am.
And this hour we're digging deeper with John Michael House.
Don't you thank Jerry Herman for writing a song like that?
That's
a real show tune.
Oh, well, that is absolutely a show tune. Yeah. Absolutely no mistake about that.
That's what I think is wrong with so many musicals now, Doug, is there's no songs in them. There's a lot of clever music, but you don't walk out whistling the songs.
Was it Noel Coward who said you go out whistling the scenery once upon a time?
Yeah, well, you did.
A while ago.
I mean, I've gone to see shows that the scenery's been fabulous, the costume's been fabulous, the acting's been fabulous, everything about fabulous, and you think, but it is a musical and I can't remember the music.
Yes, I've been there too. We won't mention Wicked, but anyway.
Oh, there were enough of them around. I mean, it's not the exception now, it's the rule. I think that's one of the problems with a lot of young writers writing musicals in Australia. They write them for their friends. They write painful things that have absolutely no relationship. You will never find an audience for the show. And then, no, they do. They win prizes, but they never find an audience for the show. And you go in and you say, well, that's all very lovely, darling, but when do I come out whistling?
It's interesting you say that because I was interviewing Tony Ayres, the filmmaker, here a couple of weeks ago. And he said that up to now he'd made quite a few movies that had won lots of prizes and the critics all loved them, but nobody actually went to see them.
Well, you see, having lived in Hollywood for a long time, the first thing before you even think about making a movie is you check your market. Mm-hmm. Who will go and see this movie? What's the point in putting 20 million, 30 million more into a movie there's no audience for?
Who goes to Dusty? Who's Dusty aimed at then?
Dusty is, well, it's in the amateur circuit in Australia at the moment to earn some money out of it, and it did a very successful production with the Clock Theatre at the National Theatre. But even as we speak, negotiations are going on, thank God, going on for it to open in London next year. Now, I also have another show opening called More Sex, Please, We're Seniors, which is a little four-hander.
Is this a sort of personal ad from you?
No, because they're straight in a retirement home, and it's being produced by Jared Carland. And then John Frost is doing a show with links to American producers on a musical I wrote with my cousin Frank Howson called Dream Lover, and it's about Bobby Darin.
So you're not slowing down.
No,
are
and
you?
I start work. I'm clearing the decks now to start work on another show.
Good Lord.
Because I just love the whole process of writing.
And you like keeping busy?
Well, I do, but busy is, yes, because I think you know, one of the worst things you can do when you get to my age, I don't feel old, is that when people steal your time with bull. I have, you steal my money, okay, I can make the money again, but don't steal my time. And one of the things that drives me nuts, and over the last few years has driven me crazy, people stealing your ideas and stealing your time and have absolutely no idea of doing what they say they want to do and just sort of like leeches on you. So I get very PO'd, so I now control my time and listen to nobody but what's in my heart.
Well, I guess I'm finding it myself. I'm turning 60 in a little while, and I'm finding, you know, the older I get, the less patience I have.
Well, you do, because you think...
Because you know the time's limited.
Well, you know what one of the things that drives me? I am what I am, and I've done what I've done mostly with my... It's Mary Hardy, the late, great Mary Hardy, said when she accepted a Tony Award... Not a Tony, a Logie Award... She said, I have one person to thank for this, me. And I think basically what happens when you achieve a certain degree of success, because you've got out there and you've really worked damn hard and to soul and learnt the fact that show business is a business, what happens, people come out of the woodwork and want to plug into your success without putting any effort into themselves. The parasite industry is alive and well.
This impatience thing, and it's not just in you know, in showbiz, but I think in life generally, as you get older, as I say, you have less tolerance for bullshit and so on and so forth.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're famous for sort of going off, rather, when you're on 3AW, for example.
It's called show business.
Yeah,
they need a raising,
yeah,
and we give it to them.
As you did recently over the business with the woman who, you know, women wearing burkas.
Yeah.
Now, that caused a huge sort of outcry of people.
Not to me. I couldn't have cared less.
You couldn't have cared less. I know, but a lot of people jumped up and down.
Well, that's right. There's democracy. They can do that.
Were you doing that because of, rather the way Jason Ackermanis was shooting his mouth off on MTR, were you doing that because it creates controversy, because it's good
for ratings?
No, because
I think it's appalling. In this country, some people want to practice gender apartheid. This is an open society. We communicate through our faces. We say hello to the checkout girl at the supermarket. We say hello to our neighbours. We go into the whatever shop and say hello to people and whatever. I believe this is medieval. We live in an open, so not against the hijab, you want to wear the veil, but not face covering. And that goes for people who have no guts when they turn up at demonstrations wearing face-concealing balaclavas, or people who are wearing a crash helmet things. Well, they don't do that. We talk to a lot of people and say, no, they take off their crash helmets before they go into a bank or a public building because of the issue of recognition. And I think if I saw someone walking down the street with a stocking mask over their face, I'd feel the same thing. I believe we live in an open society. If you want to practice those medieval practices, there's plenty of places to do that, but not in Australia where we communicate through the expression on our faces.
So you don't think it's a matter of choice for these women?
It's nothing to do. They can have all the choice they want to have in Pakistan. There's no choice here. This is not part of our country. Now, there's a lot of things. Next thing, the move will be Sharia law. You see, everybody here, this is a secular society, right?
Well, it tries to be, although not terribly successfully a lot of the time.
Okay, we are basically, we do not have a state-established religion.
No.
And I think that, and I'll go to my grave saying, we communicate through expression, we communicate by a smile, a frown, a whatever. And I don't understand why you would want to come or be living in a country that is noted for its open society and want to practice gender apartheid and be concealed from the world. Now, we add on to that. How do we know that this, you know, we know for a fact that there is female circumcision going on in this country, and that's appalling.
Part of the oppression of women.
I do.
And that's
not what we are about here. We've spent too hard and too long becoming...
So what do you say to people who said that your reactions were racist?
They're not racist. Islam isn't a race. It's a religion. It's a belief. It's not a race.
Right.
Who said it was a race, Doug?
I didn't. I'm just saying a lot of people popped up and said this is a racist comment.
Who's a lot of people? Start naming the names.
Oh, I'm just...
The usual prediction. I know the people probably at the ABC. Well, if I get criticised by the ABC, that's a big... I'm thrilled. It's like winning an award. You see, you've got to, you give people power over you, you're really stuck in a corner. Because you march to, we've just sung a song, I Am What I Am, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, therefore, you are what you are, you have your beliefs, you stand up for them. If people don't like them, that's not my problem. It's their problem to me. I don't care what they think.
No.
See, I've never cared that people thought I was, I lost jobs because I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
I lost job. I know I should have had jobs in television, and I didn't get them because I was. Did I go and weep and wail? I thought, no, that's the decision they've made, and I'm not going to let it colour my life. I'm going to just go on and do what I've got to do and have a happy life as much as I can make it happy.
So in other words, success is the best revenge.
Well, no, the doing of the job. Barbara Streisand said to me once, isn't it nice to be able to drop a name?
It is.
Barbara Streisand said to me once, you know, John Michael, it is not how things turn out. It is the joy of doing the work. Right?
Yes.
That's the joy of doing the work. And I've always said that. I've done things that have worked out tremendously, but I've also done things that have failed dismally. In fact, I've got probably three or four shows in my head that I'd love to write, and opening night would come along and I'd be the only person in the theatre,
mm-hmm.
because I know that it would appeal to me, but not to an audience.
Well, that seems to be a good point to bring in another piece of music, especially I Have a Dream from Gypsy. Why? I think... I want to ask you why you chose it, but I think I know the answer.
Well, I did see Merman do it. Believe it or not, I saw Ethel Merman do it.
Now, I've got a message here from Will Conyers, who dug out this track for us. This is Geraldine Turner from ill-fated Australian cast demo recording, and this is a very rare recording of I Have a Dream from Gypsy. And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with my very special guest this hour, the very feisty John Michael Hansen.
Might I just add something here?
Sure.
This racist thing when you criticise a religion. I'm not particularly fond of the Plymouth Brethren or Exclusive Brethren that break up families and separate people from the community. That's horrible. So, and as far as last time I looked, 99.9% of them were probably Anglos. But the thing is that my partner of nearly 20 years is non-white, mm-hmm. and I have been adopted into his family. So I'm a very odd sort of racist. But you see, this is what it's this lockstep mental. These people, the mental debris, it's all around. We live in the age of stupid. We truly live in the age of stupid.
But you're a member of the Catholic Church and you're a practicing Catholic.
No, I'm an Anglican now.
You've moved.
I'm an Anglo-Catholic for many reasons, but I think that's my own personal philosophical view.
Yeah.
And
You were a member of the Catholic Church.
Yes, and I'm still
happily.
Obviously, Anglo-Catholics are as close as Catholicism as you can get.
Well,
because
yes.
I like the formality and I like the commitment of at least 1 hour a week giving it to something beyond our understanding and not earthly pleasures, and the discipline of thinking about perhaps those who have gone before us and giving thanks for the influence that they had on your lives. I said goodbye to a friend this week, Ted Dunn, who I worked with for many years on the Magic Circle Club, a children's show of late lamented memory, and Ted played a character called Fred Bear. And I have spent several days this week, apart from the time at the funeral, giving thanks for Ted's influence on me and my life, you know, and one should do that. And sometimes it's great to do that in an area of solitude where you are totally committed to that thought.
So you're whichever label you put on it, you are a religious person,
of course,
a spiritual person.
I'd hate not to be.
It's never bothered you that particularly, the Anglo-Catholic side of things is a little different, but the Catholic Church has been very anti-gay. Hasn't it? Does that never bother you?
You know the saying in the Catholic Church, hate the sin and love the sinner. I mean, my spiritual path is my spiritual path. I'm not about to defend or offend anybody. I do what I do, and I have met very many compassionate and understanding people in both the Roman Catholic Church and the Anglo-Catholic Church.
I think I would agree with you there.
I have met many people. In fact, the church I went to in West Hollywood, which is a very gay community in Los Angeles, St. Ambrose, was packed three or four masses every Sunday, and I would say that 95% of them were gay people. Mm-hmm. The priests at St Ambrose were very accepting and compassionate people. You could go there and for any reason. And also we have to look at things like the Sisters of Charity with the AIDS hospices, who leapt into that very early into the piece. Mm-hmm. So there are many, many good people of faith who do good things.
Yeah, I think we have to make a distinction, don't we, when we talk about the churches. We have to make a distinction between the hierarchy, the system, as it were, and the people in that
system. Of course. You know, it is the body of Christ. Now, we're getting into another area now, but the church is the communion of saints, the body of Christ. There's many components to what a church is. And therefore, I'm not a smorgasbord believer. There are things I profoundly believe in. But I think it gives me discipline. Remember, I went to, maybe they, you know, they always say get them young, but I went to a very strict boarding school in Western Australia. And my mentors and teachers there were Maris Brothers and Benedictine monks.
Yes.
Now, not once, and I've checked this out with old schoolmates, not once have we ever had anyone behave in an untoward manner, because we're all men sitting around and we said, did anything ever happen to you? No, not a thing. So, you know, we and it was disciplined. And really, I think, if anything, it had to be. And then I went into the army when I was in doing my cadetship in Mildura. The one thing that all taught me was discipline. Not to get up in the morning and make your bed, you know. Do the right thing. Have a program. And that's all comes from that time. And maybe I'm a silly old thing, but I like order. I like to have a commitment through the day of what I have to do. And I got that from all those years ago in school.
Yes.
And in the army.
I was reading online when you did an interview with Peter Thompson. What you said about your school was, you said, I must have been an unattractive child because I never had any problems with anyone putting
that
word on me.
That was a flippant remark. But I have checked with boys, men I went to school with, and nothing ever happened, whatever. See, I do think there is probably a reason why, you know, you get young kids that don't have any life and they go into a seminary and their only identification is with children because they've never mixed in an adult world. And I think now they're taking that into consideration before they let people go into a seminary.
Do you think the celibacy helps or hinders with this situation? I mean,
I think it's a very personal thing. I know Anglo-Catholic priests who are celibate. I think it's a personal thing. Some people see it as a sacrifice to their maker, you know, giving up worldly pleasures and whatever. I do think it's a personal thing, and some people can handle it and other people can't. I think that probably there will be a choice in a few years, and we're seeing that already because, you know, with as the Roman Catholic Church becomes a sort of spiritual home to disaffected members of other faiths and their ministers or priests, they are actually accepting married priests. And there are rites within the Catholic Church that where the priests do marry. So I think it won't be a big step.
No. Meanwhile, in the Anglican Church, which is what you've joined now, that's beginning to split because the Americans in particular are ordaining actively gay and lesbian bishops.
Well, you know, that's
bishops.
Their right to do that. I don't argue with that. That's their choice. And, you know, good on them. I mean, if you reach a conclusion with respect and true faith, and you do that, that's fine. It's. I would hate to think people did that because they just wanted to be modern or, you know, that sort of politically correct stuff. But when people profoundly believe that it's the right thing to do, then it's, for them it's the right thing to do, and I wouldn't argue with that.
So supposing your church decided it was in favour of gay marriage.
Well, see, I believe in gay partnerships, legalised partnerships. I one of the things that confuses me is that how gay people have become so bloody bourgeois. I remember when being gay was sort of a challenge to the world.
Indeed.
You were gay. You're out there. Oh, God, you were living on the wild side. This is a different world. You were sort of a, now everybody wants a white picket fence
and to get married and to have
marriage
kids
and all that stuff. And well, that's not my look. Good on you if you want to do it. I'm happy with a civil partnership to protect basically finances.
Yeah.
But I mean, Elton John came out and said the same thing, and others. But I don't see myself going through a form of marriage. It seems to me another thing of pushing the envelope, and be happy with the fact of civil partnership. Why the hell do gay people want to copy straight people with all the bloody misery a lot of straight people put themselves through?
Well, you know, that's equality, isn't it? We're allowed to be as miserable as they are, as somebody else once put it. You know, if you object to gay people having sex, that's easy fix.
Yes.
Let them get married. And then they won't have any sex.
You want to do it, but I'm not going to... It's just not something I'd do. You see, that's another thing, though, Doug. There's all this stuff now. You have to march in lockstep. Some unknown person who's been appointed or made himself or herself the head of some gay organisation starts laying down the law about what we all should do. I'm sorry, I never got the ballot papers.
Well, I don't think, you know, I'm a campaigner for gay marriage. Yeah. I don't think anybody who argues for gay marriage, like me, says we all have to get married. My ideal situation would be where you had a choice. If the choice is open to heterosexuals to get married, then it should be open to us to get married.
All
if
right,
we
then,
wish.
Well, what about if and you? What if, about if you have menage a trois want to get married?
And if you wanted a civil partnership, then that should also
therefore
be equally
we have
available.
Therefore, we have to say once you open the door, you have to say
why?
Because equality under the law.
But
once it's equality under the law, then you can't say it's okay for these people but not okay for those people.
I don't see how for two people suddenly makes it okay for three.
No, it does, because it's equality under the law. There will be challenges. There will be challenges to the law. And you will have, in this country, you will probably have people in those religions that allow multiple, you know, four wives or whatever. They'll be pushing for four wives. So, you know, okay, that's what I want to do. If you want to see the whole of society turned into a mixed master, great. But I think civil partnerships are fine. But I think once you start to toy with, and this is where you people are so bloody stupid, you don't look beyond your own self-interest, and you are stupid because you do not look at society as a whole, the impact it will have on all sorts of things in society.
I don't see that it would have that particular
yes,
impact.
Yes, it
I
would, Doug.
I don't
Doug,
follow
it
that
would.
Argument.
But, Doug, it would, because once you open the law to one group, you have to go through and follow through the desires of it. Now, you can sit there nodding and scowling, but you're wrong. And you will see it. How many times have we seen law change because it was I'll give you the abortion laws would change for a good reason. Nobody envisaged that women would be having abortions at 8.5 months. Mm-hmm. But the envelope's been pushed and pushed and pushed.
So your position is we've got to hold the line on this one because leads to too many other changes.
I'm all for civil partnership, and I think once you change basic laws that really do affect all of society, then you have to be very careful on the steps you're taking. Now, I may be proved wrong, and I won't be around much longer. See, I don't care what happens because I'm 73. I don't care. It's the world. You inherit the world. You people have created the crap hole we live in the last 40 years. So live in it.
Now, you're a great fan of marriage in one sense, because I remember you saying once upon a time that you really hated divorce.
I do.
Because your parents
divorced,
inevitable. Didn't they?
Yes, but it does leave terrible marks on children.
So you're
unless there's a terrible violent component to it, and you know. But I think many people get married and divorced today because it's too hard to sit down and talk.
Do you think it's too easy to get married for heterosexuals? I mean, it's been said to me that people kind of sleepwalk into marriage.
I think
marriage.
They do. Look, you can't regulate that. That would be crazy. What are you going to do? Have some sort of approval thing for... It's a bit like in Nazi Germany, where you had to prove you're an Aryan before you could get married. I think you can't restrict people from getting married. I just wish more people would go into it with understanding that it should be, the ideal should be a lifetime commitment. And also when children are involved, that they become your primary responsibility.
Agreed with you there. Message come in here. Hi, so good to hear John Michael on Joy this morning. I grew up enjoying the Magic Circle Club and Adventure Island. I'm sure many people don't realise how much John has contributed to the creative success of those shows. Rob from Paran. P.S. Let's focus on respect for each other as human beings and let go of beliefs in imaginary gods. So a pat on the back and a bit of a twist at the end.
Well, I always loved that, you see. I don't say to him, don't but to be a believer. You know what I've discovered about atheism recently? It's very interesting. It's now a religion. Because I've had atheists call up and they give you a sermon. And you think, but if you don't believe, you just don't believe. Good on you. Bob Darren Hinch is an old friend of mine. He doesn't believe in God. Oh, what am I going to do, lecture him every day? No, that's his belief. But he doesn't lecture me. And I think that when I hear, see, there must be a terrible sense of doubt. Because if you don't believe, you say, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. End of story. Oh, I don't believe you. But they now get up and deliver sermons.
Well, I think certain people do. It's a case of, you know, milady doth protest too much in a lot of instances.
Yes, I mean, leave it go. Just don't believe. But I always say this. Will the atheists please tell me where the atheist hospitals are in Melbourne? I know there are Catholic hospitals, Jewish hospitals, and Anglican hospitals, Salvation Army hospitals. Will the atheists tell me where I can go to an atheist St. Vinny's or Anglicare or... Brotherhood of St. Lawrence? Would the atheist tell me where there is an atheist group caring for people with AIDS? See, a lot of this stuff, they forget that although they don't believe in God, they actually do nothing to better the world as people of faith, even if it's a misguided faith, that people of faith actually do to help the world. If you look at the number of people that go off to Africa... And give their youth and their lives and their health caring in God-forsaken places because they're driven by the word of Christ. St. Damien of Molokai, who was one of my favourite saints,
Father Damien in Hawaii. Yeah.
He went to Molokai because no one would go there to nurse the lepers, and he knew he would die going to Molokai, but he did it. Were there any atheists there? No.
Okay, we'll take another little break here and have another piece of music here. This is Sweet Charity.
Wow, this place sure is crawling with celebrities. I'm the only person here I never heard of.
This hour we are digging deeper with John Michael Howson, and he's got you all fired up out there. I disagree with Michael. We need to change the laws on marriage. It should return to be something controlled entirely by the churches. Make all other ceremonies...
It's not controlled entirely by the churches.
No, they're saying
don't.
It should be.
It should be.
By civil celebrants, i.e.
well,
civil unions.
Well, I think
unions.
That would be awful.
What else have we got here? I would love a good chat with John. I guess that's why mankind invented God. It's only the fear of God that makes us do good work. A bit sad, really. Now, isn't the Red Cross a non-religious organisation?
Yes,
Rob?
It is, but it is.
Love the interview with John Michael. What a breath of fresh air.
Where's the Red Cross Hospital in Melbourne?
Enjoying your directness. last word, I promise, also from Rob, this one, saying atheism is a religion is like saying bald is a hair colour.
Well, it is. I'm not saying it is. It has become now, it's not you just say I don't believe in God, which is fine by me. Don't want to believe in God, don't believe in God, but don't give me a bloody sermon about it and have rallies and whatever. It doesn't make sense. But one of the things about all this, of course, I get castigated at times. I've been called an old poof, I think about half a dozen times on the radio. And that's the old sticks and stones will break your bones. But I always say to people, they call it, you're an old poof. I say, well, I've known that since I was 17, dear. So what else have you spent your money to call me to tell me something I know? See, you have to let go. You don't. One of the great things about for my life is I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Say what you like, do what you like, whatever. Just don't. I don't care what people say or think about me.
You still, you know, you've said in the past, you know, we talked about gay marriage and we've talked about other things. You don't actually buy into what is loosely called the gay agenda, do you?
I'll tell you, I do think anything, whether it's what is the gay agenda? I don't know what it is. But I don't march in lockstep with anybody. Mm-hmm. That's why I've never joined. I did join the Labor Party many years ago, mm-hmm. and found that it was so many, you know, I thought it would be your opinions would be taken to into consideration. I found it very rigid and controlling. So that was that, left that. I've never joined a political party for the simple reason I would be terrible with trying to keep to the agenda and the rules. And that goes for everything. One of the dangers we live in today is people marching in lockstep. Somebody says something, and often unelected, and they say something, and everyone goes, oh, yes, I better say that, because if I don't disagree with that, people think I'm an awful bigot or I'm a horrible person or I'm whatever. And they subject their conscience to somebody else's point of view. You know, your conscience and your freedom of thought is the greatest thing you can have. I remember reading of people who were in concentration camps in terrible suffering, and they said, yes, they own my body. They could do terrible things to my body, but they couldn't own my head. And that's how they survived. And that's what I say, don't let people come in and mind control, whatever it is. Yeah, you consider some things are very good, and you say, yes, I agree with that. But then when you don't agree with something, don't just for the sake of wanting to be approved of or popular.
Or just for the sake of a quiet life.
Yeah, for the sake of a quiet life, you go along with it. That's how you get dictatorships. When people say, oh, I'm sick of all this, I'll just go along with the rest.
So, you obviously do like a good stoush, and you think it's necessary that people stand up for their own opinions.
Stand up for your opinions. Don't be frightened of having an opinion. Don't march in lockstep. Be ready to question and query anybody.
Because one of the things that strikes me as slightly odd, and I'm probably going to get slapped down for saying this as well, our community, I won't go through the alphabet soup of letters, likes to talk a great deal about diversity and about how we're a very diverse community and how we're very accepting of diversity. But at the same time, you know, you're a member of our community. You are a gay person.
Oh, but the rest of us. I get being called a poof by our vile old straights, and I get attacked by radical gays. I'm in a wonderful position.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're a diverse community and we're accepting of different things, then we should be as accepting of people like you as they are of anybody else.
No, I don't know so much. No, I don't think so. I think you now have a situation where people, it's very, very difficult to be not politically correct.
You seem to be managing quite well.
But it is difficult. It's a form of dictatorship. It's a form of mind control. And it's a form of subjugating people to a view without them rising their heads up and saying, I don't agree with that.
Well, I don't see anybody ever subjugating you, John Michael.
Please, God.
Thank you very much for joining me today. One last piece of music here. Promises, Promises from Promises, Promises. Why this particular show?
Oh, I just love it because it's a great show tune. Burt Bacharach, you can't go better.
Okay, John Michael Harson, thank you very much.
Thanks, Doug.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.